Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Alan Poe of Holland & Hart. I'm appearing in these consolidated cases on behalf of the appellants, The Gap, Inc. and Leggett & Platt, Inc. Based on the court's order of August 20th, I understand that the issue that the city had raised regarding the timeliness of the filing of the notice of appeal by Leggett & Platt has been resolved, and therefore I don't plan to address that issue in argument today. Instead, I will address the substantive issue of whether the city's sales tax was legally imposed on the Gap's purchases of store fixtures from Leggett & Platt. As we set forth in the briefs, there are three separate reasons, why the city's sales tax was not legally imposed on the Gap's purchases of store fixtures. First, the city's sales tax ordinance did not impose tax on those purchases because the Gap did not acquire the store fixtures within the city. Second, the purchases were exempt from the city's sales tax under specific exemption provisions contained in the city's ordinance. And third, imposition of the sales tax on the Gap's purchases would violate constitutional provisions under both the Colorado and the United States constitutions.
Poe, let me ask you about the first reason, and specifically with regard to the bills of lading and invoices. Did anyone from the Gap ever object to the invoices and the bills of lading when they were presented at the point of delivery?
I'm not sure I quite understand.
Oh, the reason I ask is because you make much of the master vendor agreement. Yet the bills of lading and the invoices clearly and specifically require that FOB shall be point of shipment. Not only shall it be point of shipment, but it shall be specified as point of shipment with the Gap's truck. So, despite what the master vendor agreement says, you have a course of dealing of the parties and the generation of documents after that master vendor agreement that quite clearly show that the FOB shall be point of delivery.
I don't recall that there was, there's certainly nothing in the record to indicate that the Gap made any objection to those documents. I'm not sure those documents would be the controlling documents because the master vendor agreement between the Gap and Leggett & Platt would be the document that defines legally, in the event of a dispute or otherwise, where the delivery occurs, where the terms of title passage and possession passage occur. In addition, I'm sorry.
Might be modified by conduct, even though the master vendor agreement talks about FOB destination. If the conduct of the parties is something different, can it not be modified?
I don't know whether it would legally rise to the level of being modified, where the contract specifies one thing, and there wasn't a trial in this case. The parties basically submitted briefs and exhibits, and the judge ruled on that basis. So there's no evidence that there is a course of conduct in terms of testimony that varied the terms of the agreement, the contract itself. I think that if there was a course of conduct if the city wanted to argue there was a course of conduct that changed the terms of the agreement, it would be incumbent on the city to have presented that and shown that. And while the bills of lading and the invoices were certainly admitted into evidence, I don't think that alone shows a course of conduct.
Even if it didn't show a course of conduct, we have a record that establishes evidence that there was an acquisition of the property in the city of Thornton. If that evidence is in conflict with other evidence that the parties agreed before they actually acquired the property, that they should acquire it at their home base, don't we have some evidence that would support the decision below? And in that event, are we even equipped in any respect to decide which evidence is better?
I don't recall that the course of dealing issue was really raised below.
I'm not talking about course of dealing at this point. I'm talking about documentation that shows that the acquisition of the property occurred in Thornton versus a contract that says here's what's supposed to happen.
I don't think there's actually any evidence that the acquisition of the property occurred in Thornton. There is certainly evidence, and it's stipulated, that the carriers, and there were multiple carriers, picked up the goods in Thornton. But the bills of lading show that the consignor was Leggett and Platt. In other words, the bills of lading do not show that the consignor was the Gap itself picking up or acquiring the goods within the city of Thornton and then having the carrier deliver those goods to itself. Rather, it is Leggett and Platt that is the consignor under the bills of lading, and it is identified that the charges will be paid by the Gap, but the consignor on the bills of lading do show Leggett and Platt. And that makes this somewhat similar, I think, to the case that we cited in our brief involving Union Electric Company. It's an Illinois Supreme Court case, obviously not binding on this court, but I think the only case that we were able to find and the only case cited in the briefs that really gets at the issue of what does it mean when a carrier, regardless of who pays the carrier, picks up or obtains goods within a taxing jurisdiction and then carries them outside the taxing jurisdiction. And in that case, the Illinois Supreme Court determined that the carriers, by picking up the goods at the location within the state of Illinois, did not serve as a representative, which is a term they used in their statute, which is less than an agency issue, that they weren't a representative of the purchaser in picking up those goods, and therefore those goods were not taxable in the state of Illinois. And in that case, that was true, even though the terms of the contract were FOB the mine. This was a coal property that was being picked up. So the terms FOB the mine in that case were not determinative of whether the purchaser had actually acquired the property within the state of Illinois, even though the purchaser retained and paid the carriers. Very similar to our case, where the Gap has hired and paid the carriers. The terms in the contract are FOB destination. Even if there was a course of dealing, as you're suggesting, that perhaps could be viewed as shifting those terms to FOB the Gap's or the Leggett and Platt dock, that term alone is not sufficient to cause the acquisition by the Gap to occur within the city of Thornton.
So you'd have us remand it for further findings?
We would prefer that you reverse the trial court and remand for entry of judgment. If the issue at this court becomes whether there is a course of dealing that has changed the FOB terms, I don't think even a course of dealing changing the FOB terms would result in a different conclusion here from the one that we're asking for. Because even if the FOB terms were somehow or another changed by a course of dealing to be at the Leggett and Platt dock, the acquisition or the picking up of the property by the carrier is not an acquisition by the Gap within the city of Thornton. And that's shown, I think, and we pointed this out in the briefs, in the mirror image situation. And this is a situation where Thornton is trying to have it both ways. In exactly the same situation where a Thornton purchaser hires a carrier to go outside of Thornton and obtain goods and then bring them into Thornton, Thornton says that's a taxable sale in Thornton. And Thornton's ordinance says that's a taxable sale in Thornton on which the seller must collect sales tax, even regardless of FOB terms and regardless of who pays the carrier.
I've made that point in your briefs, counsel, and I have a question for you. The risk of loss transfer based on what the FOB point is, does that have any impact on when ownership passes and the tax becomes due?
The Thornton Ordinance identifies acquisition as being acquisition of title or possession. And acquisition of title or possession doesn't occur in Thornton when an independent third-party carrier obtains the goods and then delivers them outside of Thornton. So I don't think risk of loss comes into play here. It's really title and possession that the Thornton City Ordinance identifies as the key. Risk of loss in any case would, I mean, economic risk of loss would rest with the carrier under the terms of the agreement.
Well, it depends on which agreement.
But between any agreement between a carrier and any party is going to put risk of loss for damage during transit on the carrier, or at least on the carrier's insurer. We believe that the first determination, which the city doesn't really address directly in its brief, rather the city kind of combines the question of whether the tax is imposed with the question of whether the exemption provisions apply, and we think that is an error. We think that you first have to look at the question of, is there a provision in the Thornton City Code that imposes tax on this transaction? And as we pointed out in our brief, in evaluating imposition provisions, the law is very clear that all doubts are construed against the city and in favor of the taxpayer. So if there's any doubt about whether there is a provision in the code that specifically imposes this tax on these transactions, that doubt has to be resolved against the city. I'd very briefly like to address the exemption provision and then reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. The exemption provisions on which the city relies, I think the parties agree they are unambiguous. And we think that they unambiguously do not provide that only carriers hired by the seller apply to the exemption. In other words, the exemptions say that goods that are delivered to the purchaser outside the state or the city, depending on which exemption we're looking at, by common contract or commercial carrier who is employed to effect delivery by the seller are exempt. And the fact that the term by the seller follows delivery rather than employed, we think is very significant. The only way you can restrict this provision to carriers employed by the seller and not those by the purchaser is if you move the term by the seller back in the section to follow the word employed, rather than to note that it's delivery by the seller. The constitutional provisions we don't need to get to if either of these earlier issues are resolved in favor of the gap. I would like to reserve the remaining 2 minutes for rebuttal unless there are further questions from the court.
Well,
thank you.
Good morning, Gary Jacobson, the City of Thornton, 14787. I'm going to be brief since I know you've read the briefs, obviously, from your questions. At the core of this case, I think it's really a simple retail transaction. The example I think of is a North Glen residence. Thornton, northern border is shared with North Glen. North Glen residents comes into the Home Depot that's in Thornton. He decides to order some merchandise. Either they have to pull it off the shelf or they have to do something to the merchandise, so he has to pick it up later. His neighbor Fred has a truck. He says, Fred, go down there and pick that up for me when it's ready. There's no question in that case, I believe, that the Home Depot, which is located in Thornton, is going to charge tax, because that's where the North Glen residents came and purchased the goods, and his neighbor Fred, which wasn't the North Glen residence, acquired them in Thornton. I think this is an analogous case from basically at its core. Leggett and Platt had a business in Thornton. They manufactured goods. They had an agreement with the Gap, what kind of goods they were going to get, how they're going to get paid for, and the Gap hired a common carrier to come into Thornton and pick up that merchandise at the Leggett and Platt dock in Thornton. The city's code, section 26386, establishes legislative intent. It says tax imposed on a transaction involving goods to a purchaser, taxes imposed on a transaction involving goods when delivery is to the purchaser in Thornton. a sale or exemption, it really doesn't make any difference. You inquire where the goods were acquired, not where the goods were used, because clearly in my example, my simplistic example, the North Glen resident was going to use his Home Depot equipment in Thornton, in North Glen, not Thornton. So the duty to collect tax is on the vendor, the retailer in Thornton, in this case Leggett and Platt, and the vendor has a duty to collect that tax when the transaction is in the city. Sale is clearly defined under our code and was just mentioned as sale is when the goods are acquired by title or possession. It's hard for me to imagine that the Leggett and Platt and the Gap are arguing, you know, if the Gap hires a common carrier to pick up the goods that they purchased at the Gap's at the Leggett and Platt's location in Thornton, that's not taking possession of the goods in Thornton, because the Gap was in control of the means of delivery, and that's really the issue, is they were in control of the means of delivery they acquired by possession at the dock. And as you pointed out, the bill of ladings themselves say FOB shipment, which means under the UCC that it's simply a matter of the vendor placing the goods in possession of the purchaser at their location.
What about Mr. Jacobson? What about Mr. Poe's position that this was a consignment? Well, and the consignor, in fact, didn't make an acquisition of the property at the dock?
Well, I think, Your Honor, our main point with regard to the vendor agreement is that it doesn't apply, because that was an agreement between the Gap and Leggett and Platt, and the city was not a party to that agreement, and the individuals can't decide how tax policy is going to be resolved by virtue of an agreement.
But they can decide how title passes.
That's correct, Your Honor. They can do that, and we look at, in the code, we look at what actually occurred, not exactly what the issues of possession or title were. We look at what occurred, and what occurred was the, by stipulation, the Gap's common or the Gap's common carrier acquired the possession in Thornton, and acquired by our code means title or possession. Yes.
So, are you saying, counsel, that regardless of what the agreements might have said about when they acquired title, it's your position that they acquired possession as soon as goods went into the common carrier's hands?
That's exactly right. And contrary to what the Gap and Leggett and Platt have indicated, I think it's clear that if the Gap hired the common carrier was acting on behalf of the Gap and picked up the merchandise in Thornton.
Counsel,
mm-hmm.
I referred to a case from Illinois and said that this case was analogous to that case. Could you respond to that?
Sure. I think, obviously, since Illinois isn't controlling, but I think the argument that the Gap and Leggett and Platt made was reference to the destination principle. They mentioned that a lot, and I don't know Illinois law, but I know that the destination principle is not applicable here in Thornton, certainly, and I don't think in Colorado, as you could see when you looked over the decision by the executive director of the state of Colorado. So I don't think that, and you know, Mr. Poe indicated that the definitions of acquisition were different. So I don't think it's controlling in this case, and because we have not adopted that destination principle as applicable in the city. We look at exactly the facts and where the possession, who was in control of the means of delivery, and where possession was acquired to impose the tax. Just like my simple example of the Home Depot and the North Glen purchaser. The exemption provision is a curious argument, because they're taking the position that it's unambiguous, yet they're interpreting the provision differently than the city has historically interpreted it, and I believe is a departure from the plain meaning of the ordinance in the context that you're looking at the exemption provision. Clearly, the exemption provision deals with use outside the city as one component of the exemption, but also, again, focuses on the who controls the means of delivery. To try to argue that by the seller, because it only relates to means of delivery as opposed to who is employed, doesn't mean that the code is focusing on the seller as being the one that makes arrangements for delivery for the exemption to apply, I think is to disregard the language by the seller in the code. And certainly that kind of result, that kind of decision results in an absurd result, because then you've got a seller. Otherwise, you've got a seller who doesn't know where the purchaser is going to deliver the goods, and how are they supposed to figure out where the tax is going to be imposed. So, and the seller then doesn't know how to meet its obligation to collect. So I think that argument, while clearly the language from a grammatical standpoint may be somewhat awkward, I think if you look at it in context and you give the words all of the meaning under the code, I think it's clear. And we do think it's unambiguous. And if a party, and the focus, I think, is on the reviewing court, is to ensure that the legislative intent of the city council is met in these kinds of situations. And if you look, and the way you do that is looking at the plain meaning. But if you've got another party that interprets a code provision that's contrary to the legislative intent, which we say which we assert it is under this case, then I think the court can look at other extrinsic means to try to figure out what the legislative intent was. And one of those things is the kinds of historic ordinance history that the city had. And we did in 2007 change the ordinance and the regulations to correct that grammatical error, just to clarify, so that from our standpoint, we want to make sure that the taxpayers understand our code, and we want to apply it consistently and appropriately. And we've done that since we amended the code and amended the regulations. And I think, again, when you've got an interpretation that's contrary to that legislative intent, I think the court can look at, you know, deference to the finance manager's interpretation of its own code, which is represented by the local hearing. The city treasurer appoints a hearing officer, and that's the decision of the city treasurer.
Mr. Jacobson, would you return for a moment with me to the acquisition issue? Mr. Poe says you're having your cake and eating it too, because you would nevertheless impose a tax on someone who went outside Thornton, acquired property, and brought it back into Thornton. And that presents an even larger problem of double taxation. What's your response to that?
That's 26389, Your Honor, and that's a use tax provision. What that is the city says, look, if you're going to bring merchandise into the city, we're going to impose a use tax on that merchandise. You know, as you know, use and sale are complementary taxes. That provision says we're going to look at the use of the property and make a determination about how much tax we're going to impose. Use tax, not sales tax. And we're focusing in on the use of the property in the city, not where it was sold. And what we do is under 26390, subparagraph 16, there's a credit provision. And what we do is when merchandise comes in, and this is true of lots of other jurisdictions, I would assert, we'll look at and give credit to any sales tax that was imposed when the property was first acquired, so that we'll appropriately impose use tax. So we give a credit to ensure there's no double taxation in that case, and we're focusing on use of the property, not sale of property, where we impose sale where it was acquired. Couple of final issues I want to note before my time is up. The burden of proof in this case is clearly on the taxpayer. Our code, section 26390, says it's not a matter of statutory interpretation or construction. The code says it's the burden on the taxpayer to convince the court of its position. And the city treasurer's rules of procedure establish the burden of evidence is clear and convincing. So the Gap and Leggett and Platt have the obligation to convince you of their position by overcoming that presumption and by clear and convincing evidence. And what have they presented in their briefs? They've presented basically what I believe is a strained and self-serving interpretation of our code, and then argue that because that creates an ambiguity, because that's not clear, then you have to construe doubt against the city. Well, we think that it's clear in the code that the exemption focuses on the means of delivery, and the code recognizes when property is acquired, and that's where the retail transaction occurs. Finally, I want to note to you who is not here in the courtroom today. You don't see Colorado Springs here. You don't see Denver here, and you don't see Littleton here. And the reason for that is, as you saw when you looked over the filings and the briefs, At least Denver and Littleton said they filed a notice with the district court, said we're uninterested in this proceeding. Colorado Springs said the same, but they said we want strict proof. Why? It's the same issue we just talked about with 26389. Leggett and Platt and the Gap, they could go to Colorado Springs, they could go to Denver, they could go to Littleton, and they could say we want a refund because the city appropriately taxed at the time of acquisition and the exemption didn't apply because we controlled the means of delivery, so we want a refund if they paid use tax in Colorado Springs, Denver, or Littleton, as they have asserted, which is why they joined those three cities in the underlying proceedings. So I think that's telling with respect to this case, because really they can be made whole. If you have no further questions, I think I've about dried out all my mouth and I can't speak any further. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. Mr. Poe?
I'll try to do this very quickly because my time is limited. With respect to the burden of proof, just a minor point. This is review de novo. The review by the district court was de novo. The statute says that it's treated as any other civil case. The burden of proof is on the taxpayer to prove facts, but that's by a preponderance of the evidence, and the city cannot, by a rule, change that. Secondly, the comment about the mirror image transaction, I think that's just misstated by counsel. The provision that we're looking at, 26389B, says every vendor required permitted to collect the tax shall collect the tax imposed, notwithstanding the following. The vendor shall collect the tax. That's a sales tax. That is not a use tax. There's nothing in the code that provides for vendors to collect the use tax under the Thornton City Code. So it is a sales tax that is being imposed in that situation. Third, if the exemption is limited in the way that Thornton indicates, we believe that it becomes superfluous, because if it only applies if the seller hires the carrier, then I think Thornton would agree. If the seller hires a carrier, then the transaction clearly is outside of Thornton. Why would you have an exemption for a transaction that isn't subject to tax in the first place? It would make that exemption superfluous if you adopted the city's ordinance, the city's interpretation, that the exemption is limited only to situations where the carrier is hired by the seller, not by the purchaser. Possession by a common carrier is not possession by the Gap. Common carrier is a third party. It's an independent carrier. Its job is to pick up items at one place and take them to another. The Gap is the taxpayer here, and that shouldn't be lost. It's the Gap that is the taxpayer, and the Gap's acquisition is what is taxable. An acquisition of possession by the Gap does not occur until the goods are delivered to the Gap by the carrier. Again, we would request that the court reverse the district court decision and remand with instructions to enter judgment in favor of Leggett and Platt and the Gap. Thank you.
Mr. Poe, thank you again, Mr. Jacobson. That completes our 9 o'clock docket. I